Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
As a reminder, listeners, the election is tomorrow, June 3rd. If you don't know where your polling place is or you need information, you can visit the Registrar of Voters website or give them a call. This is an important election that has everything from governor on down through all the statewide offices, Congress. There are some local races, some supervisor and San Diego City Council races, as well as some important ballot initiatives and more. Turnout is often low in non-presidential election years, but the issues are equally as important and arguably may have even more effect locally on our community and the people here. So be sure to vote and remind your friends and family. Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers. This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ, 89.1 FM Descanso. Today, my very special guest is our district attorney, Bonnie Dumanis. Bonnie, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here.
Now, Bonnie has been in office for many, many years. This is the first time that she is facing a challenger in an election. We've interviewed Terry Wyatt, one of the challengers, already. We've invited Mr. Brewer. He hasn't been available, but we're delighted to have Bonnie on the show today. So, Bonnie, I'd like to start, as I always do with incumbents, by asking, what do you consider your most significant accomplishments in office? In other words, why do you think the voters should reelect you?
Well, there's a lot of things I could point to, but probably the biggest case that I can point to is the Chelsea King and Amber Dubois case.
Yes.
And that's one where I had hands-on and worked with both families in making sure that the defendant was prosecuted, held to answer, held accountable for both murders, and has been put away for the rest of his life.
Yeah, now, you also were working on getting the Chelsea's Law through, too. Were you not instrumental in drafting or supporting that?
Both. Our office actually helped write parts of Chelsea's Law. But also, you know, it's a process whereby, with Nathan Fletcher, we work together to pass it through the legislature, because that's a difficult process. Mm-hmm. We have somebody in Sacramento that works on legislation and a team of people that work on things. So we helped tremendously, but the big moving force was the King family, Brent and Kelly King, really, with the use of social media, got things moving with the political process.
Well, very good. I'm wondering how realignment, the state shifting of prisoners to county jails, has been impacting our region, and if you can talk a little bit about the impact that's had on crime and the work that you've done, you know, coordinating with the sheriff and the other law enforcement to try to minimize the recidivism from that.
AB 109, or prisoner realignment, was something that I was against from the beginning. But right now it's the law, mm-hmm. and so working with our partners in law enforcement, Sheriff Gore, Chief Probation Officer, Health and Human Services, all of the law enforcement groups in San Diego, we've been working on programs that hold people accountable, that monitor them,
correct.
And make sure that for the low offenders, they get their lives clean, sober, and productive and get back on track so that we don't see them over and over and over again in the system. And for those that commit violent crimes, we lock them up for as long as we can. And it's been very effective because crime is at historic lows, despite the fact that we've had almost 3 years of AB 109 now.
Yeah, that's amazing, because it was really a lot of prisoners that were shifted back into the local system. Now, on gangs, we know that our local gangs have been getting into things like human trafficking, as well as drug trafficking over the border. It's a lot more than what we used to see in gang activity locally. And your office has been doing a lot of sweeps on that. I'm wondering if you can give us some statistics on the progress that you're making and, you know, how far have we got to go on this?
Well, we are one of the highest areas because of our proximity to the border and proximity to other areas, because
right.
it's not just the border. But I think what people should really be aware of is that the average age of girls that are being prostituted is 12 to 14.
Yeah, that's shocking.
And those girls are from our schools, not from Mexico, not from Asia, but from our schools. Yeah. And what's really shocking is that opposing gangs are joining together to make money off of these young girls and young boys, by the way.
That is truly frightening, isn't it? Every parent should be very concerned about that.
They should.
Yeah, I've heard, too, that it isn't just kids from, you know, the worst part of town, that they're snatching them right off the streets and even some of the, what we would call, better neighborhoods. Is that true?
That is true, and that's why we've been shopping proactive homes. In terms of putting out flyers and posters everywhere where a victim, a potential victim may be, near schools, buses, transit areas, and stores as well. But we have been working really with our law enforcement partners to get the conversation going so everybody is talking about it. So parents learn about it, kids learn about it, the community learns about it. And we have to look at these kids as victims and help them get their self-esteem back and work back, because it's been glamorized by our pop culture right now.
Yeah, that's just so important. Another issue that's been in the news a lot lately is elder abuse. The UT did an expose revealing that there's been a number of deaths, actually, some of them very preventable, in residential care facilities. I am wondering what your office is doing about that. Have you been beefing up the enforcement on these residential care facilities?
Well, we've had the best elder abuse unit in the nation. Paul Greenwood, who is the premier, goes around and speaks everywhere. But Supervisor Jacob, when she came on board as the chair, made it her goal to beef up based on a lot of those articles. So she is partnering with us. We're going to have 8 new people on board that will do. There's 2 attorneys, 3 investigators, and support staff to really help with proactively looking at assisted living care and caretakers so that we can assure our seniors that in their golden years, they don't have to be afraid.
Okay, very good. Medical marijuana has been a controversial issue. It certainly was approved years ago by California voters, and yet there's a lot of enforcement actions continuing against the clinics in our area. There are some medical marijuana patients who have contended that perhaps your office has been overly vigorous in that area, that it's difficult for patients who may have a bona fide medical need to have access to the medication. How would you respond to that, Bonnie?
Well, first of all, we don't go after patients. I personally have had friends that have had cancer and medical issues that have been relieved by the use of marijuana. So I get that. But I don't get people that are using that Compassionate Marijuana Act in order to make money and to make money off of our kids. And that's where we've focused our efforts.
Yeah. So what are the standards and what is the guideline for how a clinic can stay out of trouble and serve that need and not run afoul of the law in your eyes?
Well, right now, the County of San Diego has their regulation. It's more of a code enforcement kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And also the City of San Diego has adopted theirs, too. But there is need for more guidance in the area. And actually, we've been working with law enforcement, our office, to craft more specific clarifying guidelines so that people who have a legitimate reason can get access, but those that are really preying on people and just recreational drugs, that they will not be able to profit.
There you go. And I actually just read that the state legislature is actually looking, in the feds, I guess, as well, on some possible dipping their toes in the water into some regulation on this as well. So there might be yet another layer of that to wade through. Now, another question that's specific here to East County, Bonnie. Your office has vigorously prosecuted school board members in the South Bay area, Sweetwater, for corruption, for things like not reporting gifts that they received that violated campaign laws and so forth. We've had some of our readers in East County ask why your office so far has not prosecuted any members of the Grossmont Union High School District Board who have defied recommendations of a grand jury. I'm not sure how you're familiar with the case, but they basically took money from 2 bond measures passed by voters, both of which specified there should be money for an Alpine high school. In one case, it was the top priority on the bond measure, and yet no high school has been built. A lot of the bond money was spent off on other things, some projects, you know, Olympic swimming pools and theaters that were not even listed in the bond at other schools. The grand jury last year, in a report titled fool me once, fool me twice, said that the Alpine voters deserve some clarity from this board. They gave them until the end of last year to either build the high school and or set clear timetables for construction of it, rather, or get out of the way, basically, and cooperate with unification efforts so that these Alpine parents could split from the district and make the Alpine district up there a K through 12 so that it could expand, you know, from elementary to high school and be able to build the district and get some of that money back. Instead, the board did neither by year's end. They have said they're not setting any construction tables and they're not going to cooperate with unification. They have various reasons and excuses, but a lot of people feel that perhaps something ought to be done. Is that something that you have looked at or will be looking into, Bonnie?
Well, I'm going to give you a lawyer answer, and that means I can't answer about what we will or won't investigate.
I see.
But what I can tell you is, for instance, in the South Bay case, we get our referrals by way of a citizen complaint, or sometimes articles in the newspaper, or sometimes grand jury reports.
Right.
We monitor all of that.
Mm-hmm.
And if we get that, then remember, the grand jury is a civil watchdog proceeding which looks at government, and it serves a great role. And the both sides get a chance, as you know, to answer and that sort of thing. In South Bay, it wasn't just not reporting, it was taking gifts to influence them so that they were voting on contracts.
Yeah, that's much more serious then.
But that doesn't necessarily mean it wouldn't. But what we look at is whether or not there are criminal charges that would arise from that. And sometimes the public doesn't understand that even though it doesn't feel right, it isn't right, it's not always criminal.
Is misappropriation of bond monies, if any public entity were found to have misappropriated bond monies, could that in theory be a criminal action or not?
That's too complex for me to answer in, you know, a few words. There are many jurisdictions that would look at things like that. It could be the U.S. Attorney's Office or the Attorney General's Office or our office could look at it. But again, those are difficult cases because of the nature of criminal cases.
Yeah. A lot of readers are always asking us, you know, who's responsible for enforcing this law or that law. I wonder if you could just take a minute for those that aren't completely familiar with the scope of what the DA does, and tell us a little bit about the range of things you're empowered to investigate. For example, we all know you prosecute individual criminals and government officials lately. Does it also include, for instance, prosecuting leaders in corporations or, for that matter, nonprofit boards if they violate the law?
So, first of all, our office handles any felony within the county of San Diego. So we're county oriented. We do all the misdemeanors within the county except for the city of San Diego. And sometimes we have the same jurisdiction as the federal U.S. attorney or the attorney general, and we work together to decide which one it is. So if there were corporations or individuals that were stealing money, embezzling money, doing those kinds of things, we would take a look at it. Security scams, you know, very complex real estate fraud. Mm-hmm. We do those cases as well. It depends on the nature of the case. In terms of public monies, that's our special operations division, but also the U.S. Attorney and the Attorney General has jurisdiction over that, too, and so we work together on who's going to handle that.
Very good. Now, while you have many accomplishments that we've been talking about, there's been a few controversies in the race, and I want to give you an opportunity to comment on some of them for our listeners. Tell us your side of the story. One of them was back when you were running for mayor against Bob Filner, that your campaign accepted some contributions from a foreign national, a Mexican businessman, and that apparently violated the campaign finance laws. Were you personally aware of those funds, Bonnie, and did your campaign, once it was revealed, take any steps such as returning the money?
Well, first, what we're talking about is funds that went to an independent expenditure, not to our campaign.
Okay, thank you for clarifying.
And so the federal indictments were on the people that violated the law.
Mm-hmm.
There is no action against me. There is no wrongdoing against me. It is a foreign national who went to great extremes to hide money to put into an independent on behalf of me and several different candidates.
There you go. And of course, by definition, an independent expenditure campaign is supposed to have no coordination with the politician or their campaign.
Exactly.
Okay, very good. I guess the other main thing was, two other points on that. The Some opponents have contended that you overly politicized the office with the mayoral run by making various endorsements. I wondered what your response would be to that, and do you plan any changes in endorsement policies, or for that matter, might you be running for anything else in the future while you're still the district attorney?
Well, I can tell you the answer to that one first. I'm not running for anything else. In fact, I promised my mother for Mother's Day that I wouldn't run for any other office, so we got that one straight. And secondly, this is an elected position.
Right.
So as an elected leader, I believe strongly that the voters want to know from me who to vote for judge, who to vote for sheriff. I limit my endorsements to areas that directly impact public safety.
So you're not going to be out there endorsing for Congress or dog catcher?
And I haven't for some time. The only difference is for the mayor of San Diego, because it's a strong mayor form of government. The mayor oversees the city police and their budget, and therefore I think that's important for me, and the county board of supervisors who oversee public safety budgeting, and I think that clearly is very important.
Very good. And then the third and final controversy that has been out there in the media is that there's an attorney representing Jason Moore, who was the aide to Chula Vista Mayor Padilla. And he claimed that you had political reasons for opposing Padilla and investigating Moore. Moore, I guess, was arrested for perjury and convicted on a lesser charge, but now he's trying to have it overturned and saying that politics played a role in his conviction.
The only politics involved is what they're doing. Bob Brewer represented Steve Padilla.
I didn't know that. Your opponent.
My opponent, that's right. The attorney for Jason Moore is supporting Bob Brewer. The attorney for Castaneda is supporting Bob Brewer. I think the bottom line is consider the source.
Uh-huh. So the plot thickens here in this very controversial race. Bonnie DeMonis, the DA who we're speaking with, is one of three candidates in the running for district attorney. The other two are Bob Brewer, who is a former criminal defense lawyer, former attorney representing San Diego Gas and Electric Company, some other things. And the third candidate in the race is Terry Wyatt, who is the assistant deputy district attorney for, I think, 26 years or so. So as far as Mr. Brewer, he's had a number of controversies in his campaign as well. First of all, his wife gave money to a group that was backing his candidacy, even though these are supposed to be independent expenditure campaigns. Secondly, he's drawn some fire in the media for taking money for his campaign from the woman formerly known as Nancy Hoover, his former client, who was convicted in the J. David Dominelli Ponzi scheme on tax evasion charges. Bonnie, do you think that it's appropriate for a candidate for district attorney to accept money from a former criminal that he represented? Is that something you would ever have done, or is that common?
No, I think the real issue here is that for the last 30 years, he has been a criminal defense lawyer. And even though he has, beyond 30 years, some experience as a prosecutor, the Berlin Wall was still standing when he was prosecuting. I think he's just not qualified to be the top prosecutor. I've spent my entire life helping victims and putting the bad guys away. And I think that's the true distinction. I've been a clerk typist, I've been a deputy DA, I've been a judge, and now the DA for the last 40 years I've been in public service.
There you go. Well, thank you very much for clarifying all of that for our listeners, Bonnie. Now, another issue is that Mr. Brewer is the former attorney representing Sempra Energy, the parent company of San Diego Gas and Electric Company. And there have been some who have suggested that he may have whitewashed a federal investigation into actual bribery allegations against Sempra in Mexico. Apparently, the Justice Department pretty much asked Sempra to investigate it itself. They put Brewer, another attorney, in charge, and surprise, surprise, no wrongdoing was found there. Sempra, of course, has had a number of controversies. It's been involved on this side of the border as well. A couple of them that leap to mind is questions of just whether their executives knew about dangerous conditions, for example, involving power lines that were found by the PUC to cause the wildfires. Some of those cases are still being litigated as we speak. And for that matter, how much they knew about leaking pipes at San Onofre, and we could probably go on and on. My question to you, Bonnie, is could you ever foresee the possibility that a DA could someday be asked to investigate Sempra or SDG&E or its executives on any kind of criminal charges? And if that were the case, should a DA who formerly represented this company you know, be in charge? I mean, has Mr. Brewer ever stated, to your knowledge, whether he would recuse himself if Semper issues were to come before the DA?
I think that when you are an attorney that represents individuals, that that does pose conflict of interest issues. And more so than, because as the DA, you normally have those things that you do have to send to the Attorney General's office.
Right.
But as someone who represents many different clients, I think it does pose a problem and one that he would have to look at for each and every case like that.
Yeah, either he'd have to recuse himself, or if he didn't, then he would, you know, there'd be the concern of had there been favoritism shown, perhaps, and how something was handled. One more controversy that involves him, and also actually Terry Wyatt, the third candidate in the race. She has alleged that Mr. Brewer illegally offered her and another deputy district attorney in your office a job if they would agree not to run against him, which would, if that was true, that would be a violation of the campaign laws. I'm curious whether anybody's investigating those claims, Bonnie. Obviously, I mean, you would kind of have a conflict on that one, maybe. But I'm curious whether...
Not maybe, I would.
You would. Whether anybody else has been asked to look into it, though. I know with the mayoral investigations into Filner, for example, you I think rightly stepped aside and asked the Attorney General to handle that investigation. But is anybody looking into these allegations of whether he attempted to persuade people not to run against him by offering them jobs?
I can't answer for any other agency. Certainly other, U.S. Attorney and the AG do exactly what we do, and that is monitor information in the newspaper, or if we get complaints, we follow up on them. But generally, at least with our office, we wouldn't do anything until after the election, because we want the electoral process to take place, because many times opposite sides use the process for a headline when there's nothing there.
Very good. Bonnie, I want to end with a couple of things. I'd like to ask you, if you are successful in your reelection, what new priorities might you have for your next term of office as district attorney?
Well, there's plenty more to do, but human trafficking really is one of my passions, and that's because it's just a new packaged way of sexual assaults and child molestation. And for those that violate our children, I want to make sure they go away and go away for as long as we can get them away. So we are out there doing human trafficking. Elder abuse, again, another near and dear to my heart. My mother is in her 80s, and I want to make sure she's well taken care of. And thirdly, we're seeing a lot of cyber kinds of crimes, internet crimes against kids, scams on the internet, hacking on the internet, and, you know, security issues that relate to all of our security on the internet.
Yeah, hacking certainly is a concern for many, many people in this age where privacy, I think, is a growing concern.
And where everyone has a smartphone or a, you know, access to online, including small children who are now more high tech than we are. So it is certainly, you know, protecting victims will always be my passion.
Very good, Bonnie. Well, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. And my last question would be, where can voters out there go to find out more about your candidacy?
My website is bonnieforda.com. We have a Facebook page. We're on Twitter. So please check us out, and don't forget to vote. It is a countywide vote, so everyone in the county can vote on Tuesday, tomorrow.
Very good. Well, thank you so much, Bonnie DeMonis, our district attorney, for joining us here today on the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ.
Thank you.
This is East County Magazine's Capitol Report, bringing you the latest news and newsmakers from our nation's capital.
The race for California's 53rd congressional district will be narrowed down from 8 candidates to the top 2 vote-getters this Tuesday, June 3rd. Incumbent Democrat Susan Davis will be on the June ballot, along with 5 Republican and 2 independent challengers. Since taking office in 2001, Davis has served on both the Armed Services Committee and the Education and the Workforce Committee. She has been a strong advocate for women, veterans, and education reform. According to Representative Davis's campaign website, her top priority is to move us toward an economy that rewards those who work hard and play by the rules. She opposed the Republican-backed bill that forced the government into a shutdown in 2013. She's also a strong supporter of the Affordable Care Act, otherwise known as Obamacare. One of Davis's top opponents is Joel Marchese, a Florida-born Republican. Marchese has directed documentaries in the past and currently teaches general educational development and basic academic instructions for adults. Marchese staunchly opposes the Affordable Care Act and is ready to spend much of his time in Congress working to repeal it. Marchese also wishes to lower our corporate tax rate from 35 to 25% or lower. On his website, he cites China and Germany as examples of countries from which he believes the U.S. should take economic pointers. In addition to repealing the Affordable Care Act and lowering corporate tax rates, Marchese wants to impose a flat tax rate in place of our current progressive rate. He believes that tax breaks for the rich will stimulate the economy. Another one of Davis's challengers is Republican candidate Wayne True. True is a family physician who has served as the president of the San Diego Academy of Family Physicians, as well as on the Commission on Public Health and Scientific Affairs for the American Academy of Family Physicians. True, too, opposes the Affordable Care Act, stating that it appears to be designed to fail, ushering in single payer. True supports current immigration laws. He believes that a clear pathway to citizenship should be available to immigrants, but he also wants to secure the border to prevent any more undocumented immigrants from entering the U.S. True does not believe that gay couples should have the right to marry. He believes instead that a separate but equal institution should be designed for them. In addition to his anti-gay marriage, anti-Affordable Care Act, and tough immigration stance, True is a strong supporter of the Second Amendment. Yet another Republican challenger is 30-year Navy SEAL veteran Larry Wilsk. Most of Wilsk's platform consists of encouraging change from a local level up. He believes that educational reform starts with pressure from residents on local schools in order to increase a district's educational standards. Wilsk also believes in bringing more power to local government. He states on his campaign website, "A distant Washington bureaucracy should not govern communities." Additionally, Wilsk is an avid supporter of alternative energy sources and lax regulations on access to the Earth's energy-related resources. Republican Jim Stieringer is also in the running. Stieringer has held several public offices and is currently a trustee on the Grossmont Union High School District Board. Stieringer calls for meaningful reform of immigration laws. He also calls for income tax simplification, opposes unisex bathrooms, and pledges to read all bills before voting. Stieringer has been involved in several past controversies. On the GOHSD, he voted against Alpine Parents' effort toward unification with the Alpine Union School District, an effort that aimed to allow building of an Alpine High School. He also drew controversy after he retired from the Grossmont Healthcare District Board, then tried to get the position back after a staff job he sought fell through. Other lesser-known candidates include Republican John Edwards, a retired aerospace engineer, Independent Christina Bob, and Independent John Campbell, who has worked as a founder and co-owner in industries like finance, IT, software, and manufacturing. Although an abundance of information about these three candidates is not readily available, their names will be on the ballot this coming Tuesday, June 3rd, and they are eligible to serve as representatives of California's 53rd Congressional District. For more information on the well-known candidates, visit eastcountymagazine.org. This is Trevor Hill reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ 89.1, FM Descanso.
The East County Magazine show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interest, not special interest. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org.
You're listening to East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso.
Republican Congressman Duncan D. Hunter will face off against two other opponents, Democrat James Kimber, a Navy veteran and retired senior chief hospital corpsman and currently a neurosurgeon physician assistant, and the Libertarian Michael Benoit, a retired business owner. Due to the California Top Two Candidates Open Primary Act, the top two vote-getters in the California 50th Congressional District will then square off in an all-out battle in November. This Tuesday's primary election represents the opportunity for voters to decide whether to back the Republican candidate who aims for fiscal austerity on domestic programs and big military budget, the Libertarian candidate who aims to shrink government, or the Democrat who wants to make health care, veteran issues, and immigration reforms his top priorities. One issue that the candidates have said their views on is healthcare. As a physician assistant, Kimber says that he is dedicated to supporting patients' well-being and increasing the availability of affordable health care. He says the Affordable Health Care Act isn't perfect, but invites anyone who believes that the ACA is a net negative to come to his clinic to meet patients who didn't have health care until now. Ultimately, he hopes to see a single-payer health care system, he has stated. Congressman Hunter does not support the Affordable Health Care Act and has repeatedly voted to repeal it. He lists his priorities for healthcare as to ensure access to quality, affordable care, promote medical innovation and advancement, and eliminate regulations that stifle growth. Benoit believes that it is not the government's responsibility to provide medical care to citizens and would rather leave healthcare to the private marketplace and charity. Immigration is also an issue the candidates have looked at. Congressman Hunter has been a staunch supporter of additional reinforced fencing to secure and protect the southern California-Mexico border from unauthorized entrance by immigrants. He has also co-sponsored legislation favorable to E-Verify, an electronic system that verifies if a potential employee is legally able to work in the United States. Kimber supports the comprehensive immigration reform and believes that the path to becoming a permanent legal resident should be streamlined. While Benoit compares the U.S.-Mexico to the Berlin Wall, he advises the U.S. to stop supporting a corrupt Mexican government and to allow for more work visas. Hunter angered Middle Eastern immigrants locally last December when he told 10 News, "In the Middle Eastern culture, it is looked upon with very high regard to get the best deal possible, no matter what it takes. That includes lying." Ben Calasho, president of the San Diego East County Chaldean American Chamber of Commerce, has said that the remark was offensive to Hunter's many Middle Eastern constituents. The incumbent Congressman Hunter keeps his strictly economic recovery ideals in line with Republican lingo. He claims we must streamline federal rulemaking procedures, reduce the tax and regulatory burden on the business, and provide certainty, allowing businesses to thrive, expand, and hire once again. This view sounds similar to Benoit's view that in order to free up the energy of the creative American people, the government ought to stop trying to tax and spend their way out of the economic recession. Kimber supports raising minimum wage and also offers the idea of bringing more jobs to San Diego by suggesting that we need to expand our marketplace for aviation sector of unmanned aerial vehicles programs by easing restrictive FAA legislation and inciting more civilian manufacturing. While neither Benoit nor Hunter provided any solid examples of how to help ease the economic forward, they both offer a quick fix of deregulation legislation. Kimber has faulted Hunter for voting to shut down the government, hurting the economy and working people, while Hunter sees reining in spending and reducing the deficit as crucial priorities. Benoit believes the federal government has no business in the education of our children. Hunter services on the House Education Committee, but oddly does not list education among the issues discussed on his website. Kimber is a supporter of strong public educational system and affordable college education. Kimber, a 20-year veteran, says veterans are being forgotten. They're not being taken care of when we've asked them to serve our country. He voices concern over more than 62,000 veterans who are homeless, a 10% unemployment rate among veterans, a high rate of suicide among veterans, and long delays in processing claims. He wants to implement an electronic health system in the VA to end delays in the treatment due to lost records. Hunter, an Iraq and Afghanistan war veteran, doesn't address veterans' issues on his website, but does call for a maintained and strong national security policy that funds the military at appropriate levels and doesn't cut defense spending during wartime for the first time in American history. He criticizes President Barack Obama's cuts to the military and says, "Islamofascism must be defeated." Benoit doesn't talk about veteran issues on his site, but has this to say about military intervention. "This is simple. We should stay out of the sovereign affairs and petty squabbles of other nations. Bring American troops home. We should never go to war without declaration of war, and only to do so if we are defending our life, liberty, and property. No wars of aggression." On social issues, Benoit wants to keep the government out of the people's bedroom. Kimber is also pro-choice. Hunter introduces the most restrictive abortion measure in Congress, a measure that would have banned all abortions with no exceptions for even rape, incest, or to save the life of the mother. So coming Tuesday, make sure your votes are in for the congressional election. Reporting for East County Magazine, this is Jaden Jimenez on KNSJ Discanta.
The Sheriff's Department, San Diego Regional Fugitive Task Force, and Crime Stoppers are asking the public to be on the lookout for Daniel Juarez Martinez. He is wanted for attacking his wife and setting fire to their home in Bonita in February. He also goes by the name Daniel Catafarias and Daniel Juarez. He has tattoos, including three black circles on his right arm and the letters DD on his upper body. Martinez is also known to dress as a woman. It is believed that he escaped to Mexico after the crime, but now there is a strong likelihood he is back in San Diego County. He has ties in the South Bay area, as well as in the Glendale area of Los Angeles. Martinez was last seen driving a 2010 Toyota Camry with California license plate 6KHS540. If you see Martinez, do not approach him. He is considered armed and dangerous. Anyone with information on Martinez's whereabouts is urged to call Crime Stoppers Anonymous tip line at 888-580-8477. You could be eligible for up to a $1,000 reward for information that leads to an arrest of the suspect.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
All three candidates in the running to become California's next insurance commissioner in the June 3rd primary election call themselves consumer crusaders. Yet, where do the similarities end, and where does the actuality of their plans begin? The three candidates are incumbent Dave Jones, Ted Gaines, and Nathalie Herizi. The race pits the incumbent with a track record of battling insurance companies on the behalf of consumers against an insurance broker seeking to reduce regulation of the insurance industry, and a socialist who wants to eliminate insurance companies altogether and get universal health care for all Californians. Democrat and current insurance commissioner Dave Jones, a Sacramento lawyer and former legislator, eagerly exercises his authority to regulate all types of casualty insurance, which also includes property and auto coverages. Jones, who was elected November 2010, leads the California Department of Insurance. As soon as Jones entered office, he has been active by taking action to protect consumers by signing an emergency regulation to require health insurers to spend at least 80 cents of every premium dollar on healthcare, rather than spending it on profits or administrative purposes. The second candidate is Republican Ted Gaines, a state senator and an insurance broker from Sacramento. Gaines wants to reduce regulation of the insurance industry and insert competition in the insurance markets. Gaines is currently in the process of suing Covered California, the health exchanges created under the Affordable Care Act in California, due to over 900,000 Californians having had their health care being canceled, his website indicates. He says someone needs to stand up and fight for the hardworking Californians. Lastly, the third candidate, who's running under the Peace and Freedom Party ticket and is a self-proclaimed socialist, is Nathalie Herizi, a San Francisco teacher and a community activist. According to her website, as a single mother, she understands the importance of healthcare. Her stance is that quality healthcare should be a right and not a commodity, to make insurance companies and other healthcare organizations even richer. For more information on any of the insurance commissioner's candidates, visit eastcountymagazine.org. This is Devon Marshall for East County Magazine on KNSJ 89.1 FM, Descanso.
A bill charging ahead in the state legislature aims to put 1 million electric vehicles on the roadways over the next decade by improving consumer incentives and rebates. The Charge Ahead California initiative also aims to improve air quality and ensure electric vehicles aren't just toys for the rich. Max Baumhefner with NRDC, one of the bill's sponsors, says this will electrify our state's cars, trucks, and buses by improving access to a cleaner fuel that's the cost equivalent of $1 a gallon gasoline, which is especially important for low and moderate income motorists.
The reality is with the rebates our campaign will make possible, you can purchase an electric car for well under $20,000 and enjoy savings on gasoline if you finance that vehicle from day one.
Bahram Fasili with Communities for a Better Environment praises the bill's focus on strengthening current programs to be more inclusive of disadvantaged residents who often live in communities with the poorest air quality.
So this is really something that, you know, benefits everybody, and especially those who are disproportionately impacted in environmental justice communities.
Fasili says the initiative will also create jobs and reduce our dependency on fossil fuel. He calls it a win-win situation.
I think it's very important for people to realize we spend $70 billion in California on gasoline and diesel, and $40 billion of that leaves the state of California to, you know, oil companies and foreign oil production countries.
If the legislation is passed, consumers will be able to receive rebates of $2,500 or more. The state Senate approved the bill by a 27-9 vote on Tuesday, and it now moves on to the Assembly for debate. For Public News Service, I'm Lori Abbott.
This is Leon Thompson with the Health Report on East County Magazine. There's a new face for the medical cannabis movement. An 18-month-old girl with a form of juvenile epilepsy died in New Jersey. The girl suffered as many as 90 seizures every day. Children to young adults diagnosed with this disease are destined to suffering with little or no chance of surviving. Immediately, parents are looking to alternative medicines and treatments to save their children. The latest treatments are effective for only about half the 1 million or so people who have uncontrolled seizures. The side effects of these artificial drugs are almost as bad as the disease, says Christopher Damasio, an epilepsy sufferer. I feel like I'm moving through jello. I hate the feeling. In Colorado, a young woman whose daughter is 90% seizure-free credits her daughter's remarkable improvement to a cannabis oil derived from the hemp plant. The derivative, called cannabidiol, or CBD, is shown to be an anticonvulsant in peer-reviewed clinical studies in Europe. The refined oil from this strain of hemp has near zero THC, the high-producing part of marijuana. The life-deciding difference is zip codes. The Colorado mother had access to life-saving medicine. The New Jersey mother did not. She looked horrified and traumatized when MSNBC's Chris Matthews questioned her on his TV show. She had the eyes of a mother who had just watched her daughter die. In New Jersey, miles of paperwork that included letters from pediatric doctors, juvenile neurological specialists, a primary care physician, the governor's signature, and even a psychiatrist for the parents to certify that they weren't just after the drug for their own use. Time ran out. A 12-hour-long seizure ended in death for the girl. 2.3 million Americans live with epilepsy, a neurological condition that includes recurring seizures. More than 1 million of them live with uncontrolled seizures. Some of these people may be helped by surgery or other non-drug treatments, but for many, no answers have been found yet. People with uncontrolled seizures live with the continual risk of serious injuries and loss of life. A treatment for epilepsy with any form of medical cannabis comes with risk. Much is not known about its effects. The availability of consistent formulations needs to be addressed. Though caution is appropriate, treatment-resistant patients with uncontrolled seizures are desperate for relief from the convulsions that could result in injury or even sudden death. Existing therapies have real side effects, both known and unknown. Terminal patients have the compassionate right to choose. Just as there are risks with any treatment, every day without seizure control is a risk to life. Every seizure can bring injury, pain, cognitive impairment, or sudden death. Advocates for patients say it's important to provide access to this potentially life-saving treatment. In addition, to develop more solid evidence, they are calling for data from randomized controlled trials where potential biases of companies, doctors, patients, and parents are meticulously removed. But as long as the Drug Enforcement Agency classifies marijuana and all its derivatives as a Schedule I drug, along with heroin, crystal meth, and crack, serious clinical studies are nearly impossible. That is, unless you want to prove some negative about the Schedule I drug. Then grants and funds from the DEA are available. The positive research by scientists at hospitals and universities do not have access to the strains and derivatives that may unlock the treatments never imagined because of the overly restrictive scheduling of cannabis. Every year, an average of 16,000 people die from non-steroidal anti-inflammatory medications, common medications like Motrin and Advil. In 5,000 years of recorded human history, not one person has died from cannabis, even though for at least that long, cannabis has been used as a medicine.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM, Descanso.
This is a public service announcement from the nonprofit East County Magazine regarding the Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alert Service. During a wildfire, it's critical to receive timely news about evacuations, shelters, threatened communities, and other vital information. Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are available free to the public via email, or you can receive the alerts via Twitter on your mobile phone. You can get information on how to sign up for these free alerts at www.eastcountymagazine.org. The Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are produced by East County Magazine with support from the Viejas Band of the Kumeyaay Nation.
California lawmakers say the shooting rampage near UC Santa Barbara is a sad reminder of the need for more money to treat prisoners with mental illness. Senate Leader Daryl Steinberg says Senate Democrats are proposing the state spend $132 million on reducing recidivism among offenders with mental illnesses. He says these proposals, finalized earlier this month, are now cast under a different light than any of us had originally planned.
It's a cruel and, of course, a sad coincidence that the significance of one proposal to improve training among frontline law enforcement to recognize the warning signs of mental illness was illustrated by a gun rampage in Santa Barbara County.
Under the proposals, $50 million would be used to reestablish a grant program for counties offering substance abuse treatment, job training, and other programs to help offenders after they've been released from prison. Steinberg says the number of people with mental illnesses who are incarcerated has skyrocketed to the point that nearly half of all California inmates have been treated for mental illness within the past year.
While there is a lot of focus on the shock and sadness and a search for answers, it is important that we remain mindful that one in every four Americans will suffer a form of mental illness during their lifetimes.
The policy and budget proposals are based on a new study conducted by Stanford Law School's Three Strikes Project, which finds that modest yet significant policy changes can help improve the enormous human and fiscal cost of warehousing the people with mental illnesses in California prisons. For Public News Service, I'm Lori Abbott.
Welcome to Bookshelf, bringing you stories of local literary luminaries and some great books to read. My name is Raina Menashe, and I'll be your host for this segment.
Today I'm interviewing Diana Guest, licensed psychotherapist for 22 years and co-author of Where's My Life? I Know I Put It Somewhere. My guest, who specializes in a holistic practice called bioenergetics, has also co-authored other publications such as The Clinician's Guide to 12-Step Programs and the He Said, She Said book, as well as journals and an instructional DVD called Stressless, The Body as Guide. Welcome, Diana. It's a pleasure having you on Bookshelf.
Thank you. I'm very happy to be here.
Let's start with your book, Where's My Life? I Know I Put It Somewhere, an intriguing title. Mm-hmm. What's that book about, and why is its message so important?
Well, the book is a guide and a personal workbook regarding positive ways to manage stress in your life. And we have simple exercises, and it's got a lot of really practical information in it. And the reason I think it's so important right now is we live in times that there's so many demands on us. Mm-hmm. And then we have all this electronic technology that's supposed to make our life easier.
Right.
And instead, it just makes more and more demands. Mm-hmm. And so it actually creates more stress. And so we kind of live in this, you know, respond right now world, mm-hmm. rather than a, you know, be here now world. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we multitask, and that creates a lot of stress on the brain and the body. And so we tend to think of stress as like sort of that monster that's outside the door.
Right.
But it really is how we respond to all these demands in our lives. And so this book is really to help people get more clarity about what they do that adds to the stress, and then really practical ideas about what to do to be less stressed.
Can you give us a couple of those ideas or anecdotes?
One of them is just being aware of your breathing. You know, something as simple as breathing. we often hold our breath and we don't even know it. And I'll say to my clients things like, you know, notice that you're not breathing. And they're kind of like, well, of course I'm breathing. If I weren't breathing, I'd be dead.
Right.
But we do hold our breath when we're feeling strong emotions. We're trying to hold back the emotion. We're going to say something to someone that maybe is difficult for us to say. And this adds stress to us, into our bodies. And so it's important to be more aware of our breathing, and particularly our exhale, because when we exhale, we're activating the parasympathetic nervous system, which is the calming part. So breathing is very important. Another one is noticing how you're reacting to things if you're trying to control things that you just can't control, and then feeling helpless or powerless to do that. So it's recognizing what you can control and what you can't control.
Is that connected to self-talk?
Yeah, yes. A lot of times it's self-talk or expectations about what we should be able to do. When we start having that internal dialogue about I should do this, I should do that, it's a sign that we're preoccupied and getting stressed out or worrying about things that we can't do anything about.
Well, and what about the onslaught of technology? What do you suggest there?
Well, one that's really important is disconnecting from technology, you know, is getting away from the computer, getting away from your phone. You know, it's funny, I was recently in China doing a training, and I was amused and taking some pictures where you'd see everybody there had their iPhone and their heads down.
Right.
And recently there was a video that was going around the internet, and it was called Look Up. And it was about people having their head in their electronics and missing life, missing living.
Right.
And so even just taking a day off from all the electronics and engaging in conversation with people, saying hi to your neighbors.
Right. Great suggestions. Yeah. Be in the moment. I know that you're a certified bioenergetic therapist.
Yes.
And that you emphasize the connection between mind, body, and emotions and healing. If you could tell us more about what bioenergetics means to you and how can readers benefit from it?
Okay. Bioenergetic analysis has been around since the 1950s, which a lot of people are
really
surprised by that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Because it's kind of the cutting edge, but we've been around for a long time. And what bioenergetics does is it's like traditional talk therapy in the sense that we deal with how you think about things and how you feel about things. And then we go a step further because we also look at how is that manifested in your body. So we work with your nervous system. We work with your muscular system. So we help you, but it's one of the great things about stress because we can help you down-regulate, deal with anxiety, but also help bring more energy to the body if you suffer from depression or something like that. You know, it's about really being more alive. And if somebody wants to read a book about bioenergetics, the one I would really recommend as a starting point is Joy by Alexander Lowen. He's the father of bioenergetics. And it's really about, you know, the body holds our history. And it's really about being able to really be more alive and have more pleasure and joy in your life.
And being very self-aware, it sounds like.
Very much self-aware and very aware of our body. Because our body gets the messages way before our brain gets it.
Right.
And most of us in our culture have been taught to ignore those signals from our body. Just keep going. Just, you know, we're all human doings instead of human beings.
I love that.
Yeah.
In addition to writing and providing therapy here in San Diego, you have a very rich history of teaching, speaking, presenting internationally, places like China, and mentoring other professionals. What's the best part of your work, and what would you like readers to know about you, the author and therapist?
Well, first of all, I would say that I have the most amazing job. You know, some days I think this job is so incredible, and then some days I think this is the weirdest job, but I love it. Because people, when I'm in my office, people come in, they share things that maybe they don't share with anyone else, and it's very special, and I really take that seriously. But I love hearing people's stories and about their lives and their struggles and their joys. So I love that, and I also love teaching, and fortunately, because I'm on the international faculty for the Bioenergetic Institute, I get to travel. And I've taught in Brazil and New Zealand and now in China. And I love to travel. And I love to learn about different cultures. And the thing that I learned from it is not only the respect for the differences, but how much we're all alike and how we're all really wanting the same things out of life.
It does sound like a wonderful job.
Yeah, it's great.
One last question, Diana. What are you writing next? Is there another book in the works, fiction or nonfiction?
Right, right. You know, I get excited about ideas and I go, oh, that'd be a great book, or oh, I could do that. And then I just get so involved in living my life that at this point I think I'm really focusing on my teaching and being a therapist. And so probably, oh, I'd say there might be a book in the future, but nothing's on the horizon right now. So thank you for asking.
Okay, well, our time is up, but thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. I thoroughly enjoyed this, Raina. Thank you so much for inviting me.
For more information on Diana Guest and her work, please visit her website at www.dianaguest.com. Again, this is Raina Menashe, and you have been listening to East County Magazine's Bookshelf, bringing you stories of local literary luminaries and some great books to read.
If you're angling for a fish dinner or just enjoy catch-and-release fishing, you can drop a line into Santee Lakes where night fishing kicks off on June 12th. There are a total of 5 night fishing dates coming up, June 12th and 26th, July 20th and 24th, and August 7th, from 5 p.m. to 11 p.m. on Lakes 1, 2, 3, and 4. Bring a lantern, no fishing license is required, and no radios are allowed to disturb the silence of the evening or the fish. The lakes have been stocked with 8,000 pounds of catfish so far this season, with more coming on June 6th. Raymond Paul caught the largest so far, a whopping 4-pounder, in Lake 4 using hot dogs and mealworms as bait. The bass are biting in all lakes. According to the Santee Lakes Fishing Report, though Lakes 1 and 5 have been the hot spots. You can also catch bluegill by fishing around the cattails or off the docks. Santee Lakes has 5 docks plus 4 fishable islands, making this a fun destination to bring the kids and get them hooked on fishing. You can get more information or sign up for free fishing reports, including tasty fish recipes, at www.santeelakes.com. This is Leon Thompson reporting for East County Magazine.
This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's radio show. We extend our appreciation to the San Diego Performance Academy for the use of their studio, to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County and Descanso. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats, Donnie Gentile, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, A.K. Jules, Brian Boykel, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, and Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road. We also thank the County of San Diego for a community enhancement grant to support our Destination East County segment. If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.